Negotiators have just reached a new trade deal to govern commerce between the U.S. and countries around much of the Pacific. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. Those are the 11 countries that have joined the U.S. in agreeing to a far-reaching trade agreement known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Final negotiations on the terms of that controversial deal concluded this morning in Atlanta after a long week holed up in a hotel there. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson was in Atlanta last week and joins us. Tracy, remind us how sweeping this thing would be.
The size of this deal alone makes it significant. It covers about 40% of world GDP. And the fact that these 12 countries were finally able to hammer out an agreement makes this a pretty big deal. Negotiators were working up until 5 a.m. this morning, still hammering out issues related to the dairy industry, for one. And that's after extending talks several days past their original deadline. Going into this last week, it was very unclear that negotiators would be able to wrap this thing up. There was lots of pressure on them, yes, but also lots of caution. One of the options on the table was that they could have come to something called an agreement in principle. That's basically, it's sort of like a handshake deal, an agreement to agree, if you will, without having all of the terms fully settled. And that's not what happened here. They've come to a full agreement.
But this full agreement today does not make this U.S. law. It goes to Congress next. What are its chances there?
It's going to be really, really tough to get this past Congress. Here's how Jeffrey Schott with the Peterson Institute describes it.
The trade negotiators will hate to hear this, but what they did this weekend under excruciating circumstances is only the easy part. Now they each have to go back home to their capitals and get their legislatures to ratify and implement the obligations that they have agreed to this weekend.
This has already become a hot button issue in Canada's ongoing elections. In the U.S. earlier this year, Congress only very narrowly approved the negotiating powers for President Obama that have allowed this agreement to move forward. And that was only after he personally lobbied for it with members of Congress. So this will not be easy. There are parts of this deal that are very controversial. Labor, public health, environmental groups have expressed concerns about various pieces of it, but we'll really have to wait and see what these negotiators agreed to this past weekend before we really know how it'll move through Congress.
Right, before we really know. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson, thank you. Unnamed Volkswagen sources are telling the Wall Street Journal today the company's focusing on two senior engineers in its probe of how 11 million VW and Audi vehicles around the world were designed to cheat emissions tests and to pollute. The chief engineer at VW's Audi division and the man who helped develop racing engines at VW's Porsche division are named in the article today. Whether higher-ups also knew remains uncertain. And you know that plastic container you have with all your craft supplies? Now, if you peek in there today, you will see a merger going on. Newell Rubbermaid said today it'll spend $600 million to buy Elmer's Glue, which will now join Sharpie Markers, Papermate Pens, X-Acto Blades, and Crazy Glue in one big Rubbermaid box. Used to be a trope. TV and movies ain't what they used to be. Now, cable and streaming TV are in a new golden age, and so are documentary films, as Marketplace's entertainment correspondent Adrian Hill reports.
Apologies in advance for the generalization, but the audience for documentaries used to be academics and old people, but not anymore.
The documentary audience is as diverse as it is for our series programming.
David Nevins is CEO of Showtime Networks, home of Ray Donovan, The Affair. He says Showtime is investing heavily in docs this year, from The Spy Masters, an insider look at the CIA, to Prophets Pray, about the life of polygamist Warren Jeffs.
Our young people need to be protected from evil influences.
To a doc called Listen to Me, Marlon.
Since I don't do anything else well, I might as well put all my energies into being as good an actor as I can.
Nevin says Showtime looks for docs that'll get attention, break news, to help make Showtime part of the broader cultural conversation.
You know, I'm trying to create a sense of a club that people want to be part of, and documentaries have been a very effective way of doing that.
It doesn't hurt that they're relatively cheap to make. Mitchell Block produces documentaries and teaches at USC's School of Cinematic Arts.
An extraordinary documentary probably cost a fifth of what a TV hour cost.
And the two-hour feature-length doc?
You're looking at works that cost anywhere from $100,000 to several million dollars.
Still peanuts by Hollywood movie standards. So you got more people watching docs, more places funding docs, there are more documentaries in theaters, more docs online. You might think documentary filmmakers spend their day sipping champagne and driving Teslas.
Not a lot of people are getting rich.
Michael Lumpkin is the director of the American Film Institute's Documentary Festival. He says as documentaries are getting more attention, they are also getting more respect.
Documentaries are now, in a number of instances, are competing with fiction films at major film festivals and winning prizes, not just in the documentary category, but, you know, in, you know, the best film of the festival category.
He thinks the day isn't that far away when a documentary film will be up for Best Picture at the Oscars. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Speaking of docs, the highest grossing doc of the year so far is the Amy Winehouse movie. We're told that coming in second now is Meru, the mountain climbing film. We talked to the co-director of Meru about how she kept the budget so low. If you missed that on the air, it's at marketplace.org. From studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.